This is Earth Eats. Welcome. I'm Annie Corrigan.
We always get tickled when we go to like farmer's market or food demos and, you know, we said, try the fish. Oh, I'm not going to try that trashy fish. Try it. You can spit it out. It won't hurt my feeling. Oh, that's delicious. That's exactly how many people see our staff.
Lula Liu of Fin Gourmet. We'll hear a story today of second chances and Asian carp. Chef Daniel Orr cooks with catfish and makes it delicious with no breading and no deep frying. From Harvest, we'll hear about a business that goes from food waste to bugs to livestock. And continuing our December of drinks, we do kombucha today. Reporter Aubrey Cedar adopts a SCOBY and DIYs a big batch of fermented tea. An important news story kicks off our headlines. Here's Mark Chilla.
Bacteria containing a gene that confers resistance to an important class of antibiotics have been found at a swine farm in the U.S., raising the troubling concern that one of the last lines of defense against hard-to-fight infections may be failing. The drugs, called carbapenems, are used to fight infections resistant to more common medicines and are banned for use in livestock. The team of researchers from Ohio State did not find evidence that antibiotic-resistant bacteria had entered the food supply. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention had already called carbapenem resistance an urgent threat to human health that is responsible for about 600 deaths a year. Researchers had previously found in livestock resistance to another antibiotic, considered among the last lines of defense against infections resistant to multiple drugs, called colistin. In other news, crops genetically engineered to withstand certain pesticides have a short shelf life in Boulder County, Colorado. The county's commissioners voted last week to ban growing genetically engineered crops on county open space. The decision does not apply to privately owned farmland. In 2015, farmers planted GMO corn and sugar beets on about 1,200 acres of the county's leased open space. Starting in 2017, tenant farmers will have 5 years to remove GMO sugar beets from their crop rotations and 3 years to eliminate GMO corn. That means 2021 would be the last year any GMO crop is grown on county-owned land. GMO bans enacted in other parts of the country have a mixed track record of success. Earlier this year, a judge in Hawaii ruled that three counties overreached when trying to regulate GMOs and pesticide use. Voters this election in Sonoma County, California, enacted a GMO ban, but Boulder County's ban is unique in that it targets just public land use. And Amazon says it's opening a new food and convenience store that doesn't have a checkout line. Instead, the company envisions customers at the Amazon Go store picking up whatever they want off the shelves, then simply walking out with it. The items are automatically billed to their Amazon accounts. The retail store in Seattle will offer ready-made meals and some grocery basics, according to the website. The company says it's testing the store with its own employees and plans to open to the public in 2017. According to multiple reports, this is one of several experiments that Amazon is launching with the hope of capturing the lucrative market for groceries.
Okay, do take the time to go to our website to read more about these stories. They're compiled in the newest podcast post for easy clicking. Mark Chilla, glad for your work today.
Happy to do it.
Americans waste a staggering amount of food. Instead of letting it rot, some entrepreneurs want to put it to work feeding insects. Harvest Public Media's Luke Runyon explores the world of bugs and how they could fuel our food system.
Phil Taylor's enthusiasm for bugs is infectious. The ecologist is beaming as he weaves through a greenhouse in rural Boulder County, Colorado. A room the size of a shipping container sits inside.
Well, you can walk in here into the, we call this the breeding chamber.
We have other words
no
for it.
No one's ever asked me that before.
I hesitate to say it, but it's called the brothel.
The brothel, because the room is full of flies. Black soldier flies, to be precise, having sex.
Come on in.
Okay.
You probably have 50 insects on your hat right now.
Great.
And there's probably about 20,000 flies in this room.
Wow.
These flies are the money makers in Taylor's operation. His startup, called Mad Agriculture, takes the larvae from these flies and puts them in bins full of food waste, pulp from a nearby juice company, and lets them chow down for days.
So, these larvae are about a quarter inch long, and they're only 6 days old, and they are voracious eaters.
Would it be inappropriate to call them maggots, or is...
It's not inappropriate. No, it's accurate.
Taylor then sifts the larvae out, kills them, and turns them into treats for backyard chickens. His eventual goal is to get big enough to turn tons of larvae, or maggots, into a protein-rich feed ingredient for large-scale chicken farms and fish farms.
In this facility, we can produce, you know, equivalent to an acre of soybean protein in 2 weeks in this little tiny refinery when it's fully cranking. And so, not requiring any fertilizer, no water, no arable land.
Taylor's not the only one trying something like this. Black soldier flies are quickly becoming the hot new feed ingredient. Big operations have sprung up here in the U.S., Canada, China, and South Africa. But why these particular bugs? It's all in their appetite. Texas A&M University entomologist Jeff Tomberlin says the larvae start out tiny, barely visible.
But they can grow to be as large as a half a gram each.
And that's in just a matter of days.
So they're voracious in terms of appetite. They can consume just about anything organic, from plant to meat.
The insect farmers see their greatest opportunity replacing fish meal, a protein-rich powder made of ground-up fish, often fed to farmed fish, hogs, and other livestock. And Tomberlin says over the last couple decades, it's gotten a lot more expensive, leaving an opening for protein from bugs.
They're one of nature's custodians, I guess you could say. They go around and they clean up organic matter that's decomposing and turn it into something valuable.
Switching to feed made of insects instead of fish meal would keep some of those fish in oceans, he says. And it would divert food waste, a huge source of greenhouse gas emissions, from landfills to feed insects. Still, even though there's a ton of buzz around bug growers, they have a long way to go. Rick Barrows is a fish feed consultant in Bozeman, Montana.
If you talk to the large feed manufacturers, they'll laugh at insects because they just say that you'll never be able to produce large enough quantities. I need 100,000 tons a month. Can you give me that?
Back at Mad Agriculture, CEO Phil Taylor isn't deluding himself over the ability of insects to overtake fish meal or soybeans in livestock feed. But he says it gives farmers another option and could have big environmental benefits. If nothing else, these insects make our food waste disappear.
The one thing that we're missing out of the human system are decomposers. We don't think about it. We just throw it in a ditch. You know, we're great at farm to table, but we're really bad at table to farm.
And Taylor says scores of maggots could help close that loop, recycling waste back into the food system and keeping it out of a landfill. Luke Runyon, Harvest Public Media.
Read more at harvestpublicmedia.org. The study of what's in our gut, the many millions of helpful microbes and bacteria that aid in digestion, is a fairly new realm of scientific exploration. Nevertheless, the health supplement industry markets microbe-stimulating probiotics as essential to maintaining optimal gut health. Some supplements can cost $30 a bottle, which can break down to $1 a pill. If you want to add probiotics to your diet but don't want to break the bank, reporter Aubrey Cedar has some good news. Fermented foods like kombucha that you can make at home also pack a probiotic punch. She stopped by a how-to class and brings us this explainer.
It's noon at Mother Hubbard's cupboard. Barbara Lair is setting up for her weekly class called Fermentation Friday. It should be noted here that Barbara is not a trained nutritionist, or a doctor, or a scientist. She offers her knowledge about fermented foods and teaches students how to make various kinds of fermented foods because they have been beneficial to her health personally.
Well, the benefit of adding fermented foods primarily is that you are contributing to the health of your gut flora. So your intestines are the home of a grand battle throughout your whole life, good guys and bad guys, good bacteria and bad bacteria. And depending on how you feed those bacteria and what kind of encouragement you give them will dictate in many ways how robust and healthy you are. A lot of our health begins in our gut.
Today's class is about kombucha, the fermented tea that Barbara has been making for herself for 6 years. It can cost as little as $2.50 to make a 2-gallon batch of kombucha. Makes me feel like a sucker for paying $3.49 for 16 ounces at the store. Barbara's first patron comes in around 12:30 and is excited to watch the kombucha demonstration. She has had kombucha before and likes it, but thinks that the prices for store-bought kombucha are way too high.
Okay, so basically you turn sweet tea into kombucha by adding what's called a SCOBY.
They look like octopi. They do.
They're so gross. But it's actually...
She's right. It's pretty gross. When she brought out the jar of SCOBYs, it reminded me of a sea creature preserved in formaldehyde. Not necessarily something that I'd like to ingest. SCOBY, by the way, is actually an acronym that stands for Symbiotic Colony of Bacteria and Yeast.
And this is what turns sweet tea into kombucha. It takes about 10 days.
Okay. You're probably not going to find SCOBYs on the shelves at your local big box grocery store. Barbara got her first SCOBY from a friend.
Part of the process of brewing kombucha causes the SCOBY to multiply itself. And I have patrons from the hub who learn how to make kombucha, and then when they come back for another Fermentation Friday class, we'll bring their extra SCOBYs. So we usually have enough to share. So after 10 days, about roughly, when this is done, then you pour all of the kombucha off of the SCOBY, right? Mm-hmm. But actually you save back a little bit, because in order to brew your kombucha, you need some kombucha and the SCOBY.
Okay.
So you want to keep some of that. It kind of jump starts the fermentation process for the next batch. After you've done that, that's when you can second ferment it. When you second ferment it, that's when you get the good, fun flavors. And there are all sorts of different kinds of flavors. You can do almost anything to flavor kombucha. I really like lemon and ginger. I also love elderberry and cinnamon.
Very, very great. Yeah. I have a recipe that I can send you.
For Earth Eats, I'm Aubrey Cedar. You can see pictures of Barbara Lehr and Fermentation Friday at eartheats.org. And I'm actually sitting here with Aubrey. How's it going?
It's going good.
So I hear you took a SCOBY home with you after that day?
I did. Barbara gave me a SCOBY and sent it home with me, and I made kombucha.
Okay. How did it turn out?
It's going well. I did both ferments, the first one that she talks about when it's just regular tea, and then I did a second ferment, and I put a bunch of raspberries in with it and put it on my counter and left it there. And like she says in the second ferment, the little organisms just eat away at the raspberries, and you pop it open and it's all this fizz. And then you get what you get in the store, which is very tasty, sugary.
Yeah,
kombucha.
The good stuff. Mm-hmm. If we're thinking about the price of store-bought kombucha versus the time you had to put in at home to do it yourself, was it worth it?
I think it was, because I made a lot of it. Yeah, and I can also control like what flavor it is. Mm-hmm. Like, I got to make raspberry, which isn't something that I could find at the store.
Well, and Aubrey's SCOBY has multiplied times two, so it's like the mother and then two little babies, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of cool. Yeah, I'm definitely going to take them back and donate them to the SCOBY Hotel at Mother Hubbard's Cupboard, because they have a nice little one.
Aubrey Cedar, thanks.
Thank you.
All right, recipes coming up. And then we meet Amanda Lagore Smith and hear how Asian carp helped her rebuild her life. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. Urgent Foods, a locally owned food truck offering gourmet choices for all lifestyles, tastes, and diets. From vegetarian to paleo and low carb. Taste matters. Your taste. Current truck location is available at whereisurgent.com. And Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent and owner of Personal Financial Services, providing tax preparation for individuals and businesses,
located on the Beeline Trail. More information at personalfinancialservices.net. Last week, we had fun with farmer Candace Minster, who had a bumper crop of ginger at the White Violet Center for Eco Justice. Today, we're highlighting two recipes that feature ginger.
All right.
Jeff Daniel Orr is a ginger guy. He puts it in desserts, he puts it in baked goods, he candies it, and of course it goes in many of his savory dishes. Here he is.
Thought we'd do something sweet today, but you know me, a little sweet, a little spicy. So we're going to do a Caribbean-style nut brittle. So it's kind of like a peanut brittle, but we use all different kinds of nuts. We're going to take a large-bottomed pan, wider than it is tall, and with flat sides. And we just put the sugar in there to cover the bottom. And 1 cup of corn syrup. Now, usually I don't use much corn syrup, but in this case, it really makes a peanut brittle that lasts a long time, doesn't get sticky too quick. Okay, you can see here we're starting to get a little golden there. It looks a little bit like the Golden Girls. You can see it's getting foamy, almost looks like a head of a glass of beer. Now we're going to add our seasonings. Chili flakes, regular red pepper chili flakes, ginger, salt, sweet seasons powder, which you could also use Chinese five spice powder. Okay, now we're going to add the nuts. I've got some toasted walnuts and some mixture of macadamia nuts, almonds, and pumpkin seeds. This is, we're starting to work quick. I'm gonna add the butter, 2 tablespoons. Okay, and finally, some baking soda. And the baking soda is what's gonna make it real fluffy. You wanna really coat everything, turn it, make sure everything's enrobed in the sugar. Okay, now I've got a sheet tray. I'm just gonna spray it with a little nonstick spray. Pour out the brittle. And then we'll just pat it out so it's an even layer.
Let it cool to room temperature before you break it up. And now perhaps a more traditional use of ginger with a couple fillets of catfish.
Some people don't like catfish because it's got kind of a earthy flavor. Some people say a muddy flavor. But this is a great way to do it. And it has a real Asian flair, which kind of cuts back on some of that earthiness. All right, we've got 2 fillets of catfish. We're gonna put one on each piece of foil. And the foil I have are about a foot square. Okay, now we want some flavors to really permeate the fish. And so what we're gonna do is we're going to put some julienne ginger. This is just ginger that I've cut up really fine. Thinly sliced garlic. Okay, next I'm going to add some chilies. This is gonna perfume the fish, but it's not going to really make it that spicy if you don't eat the chili itself. Next, we're going to add just a little touch of sesame oil, again, giving that Asian flavor. It's more of a condiment than, you know, kind of a fat. You just put a little bit on. Then I'm going to start layering it with some vegetables. I've got some leeks and then some carrots. Now we're going to put some shiitake mushroom caps, and they're going to add a real meatiness to this. Okay, now we're going to squeeze the citrus over the top. I've got some lime juice. Okay, and then what we're going to do is we're going to wrap these up and have them shaped like little fish, and then we'll throw them on the grill or throw them in a 500 degree oven until they puff up and you know, fill with steam. And when that happens, the fish will be cooked. We're just going to open them up. You can smell the ginger and the garlic. We're going to just take a little bit of olive oil, drizzle it over and then around the outside. All right, and there is our catfish en papillote, or steamed catfish with Asian vegetables.
Thanks to Daniel Orr and the staff of Farm Bloomington. When you enter the keyword ginger in our search system, like I just did, you get like 70 entries. Most of them are recipes. Take a look at eartheats.org. Asian carp are found in freshwater bodies throughout the U.S., like the Mississippi River and Kentucky Lake, and they're a problem. a big one, in some places where they've taken over ecosystems by feeding on nutrients in the water that other species rely on. Where most have seen an enemy, Lula Lou and her partner John have seen an opportunity. From reporter Taylor Killo, we've got a story about redemption, not just for the fish, but also for the people who work at Finn Gourmet. Taylor visited their processing facility.
It's just gooey and thick and mushy, but it's real white. Doesn't have any scales in it, doesn't have any red meat. So it's got like a pinkish tint to it, but it's real pure and you can tell that it's clean.
Amanda Lagore-Smith is describing surimi. It's a paste made of fish meat that she's shaping into patties. You've likely had surimi before. It's what's an imitation crab meat, but you've probably never had this kind. This surimi is made from a fish many people wouldn't expect or eat. It's made from Asian carp. Amanda's in charge of operations at Finn Gourmet in Paducah, Kentucky. I'm at their processing site. It's a small white building with a blue door and a couple of trailers outside for some extra space. Inside, a team of about 15 people spend their days filleting and deboning fish. Putting out hundreds of pounds of big head Asian carp food products per day. It's an innovative solution to a problem that has very quickly taken over fresh bodies of water, particularly those here in the Midwest. And that leaves a bad taste in many people's mouths, though Lula Lou, who's the owner of Finn Gourmet, says it shouldn't.
There's many, many false perceptions of this fish. People here think of this as a scavenger, as a bottom feeder, but this is a filter feeder. It is extremely clean. It's got great omega-3, no lead, no mercury. It's not eating other fish. It's just very good to eat. This fish is a very enduring fish. In Asian culture, the carp is where the dragon comes from. So the gods said to the fish, if you can jump through these three gates, then I will transform you into the dragon. The catfish made it through the first round, but couldn't make it through the other two. And so they were given whiskers like the dragon. And the carp, through trial and error and keeping at it, was able to finally jump through all the gates and became the dragon.
Finn is a second chance employer. They hire former addicts and people convicted of felonies. People like Amanda.
It says something about your character and your motivation about wanting to have a second chance.
The way I grew up, you know, you went to church, you worked hard, and you was involved in drugs and alcohol. It was a very confused, ride the fence type of life. Heroin was my drug of choice. You know, it just numbed me completely. It took away the pain, but it made my life living hell.
Amanda has two young boys, and at one point during her addiction, they were taken into state custody. Eventually, her parental rights were terminated completely.
I strived ever since I was 17 to be somebody and have something. Go to school and take care of my children and give them something better than what I had in life. I didn't do that for them. I failed them. I realized that death didn't even scare me. I done overdosed like 8 times. And for some reason, God gave me that 8th breath. At that point, I just got down on my knees and I said, something's got to change. 2 days later, I got arrested.
It was the best thing that ever happened to her. She was sentenced to jail time and used that time to get clean and to make a plan for when she got out.
When I hit my rock bottom and I knew that I was never going to be anything in life, it just motivated me. I turned that from negative to positive and said, I don't care what it took, I was going to get sober.
After serving her sentence, she ended up at a residential recovery program called Ladies Living Free.
It's a 6-month program, and then they have a transitional home afterwards that you can stay in for 3 months so you can save up your money and get you a place. Lula had called up there and said, we're a second chance company. We like to reach out to people that would like a second chance in life. So I called them like every week for like a whole month.
I mean, this girl would not stop.
And I told them that I wanted to learn everything.
So we hire her.
I worked 110 hours every 2 weeks. I would fish at night and I would work during the day. There was never a moment that I was not doing anything. I didn't want to be alone at all. I didn't want to have time to think about anything.
Amanda stayed busy to kick her addiction, and it worked. But some of her other old habits were even harder to overcome.
I had a lot of rough communication skills. I was kind of rough around the edges. Used to, nobody could be behind me. I would be like, listen, you've got to get somewhere else. You know, you cannot stand behind me. I was still learning not to be so defensive.
There was things that she did that was just off. Then the first 6 months, I wanted to fire her. We didn't want to disrupt the team. We talked to her, and she took it not as maliciousness. She took it as it's to better herself, and she improved.
I'm fighting every day to be the best person I need to be. Through being here and learning and watching Lula and John and how they communicate with people, I just really learned from how they handle situations.
You know, John will tell you, he's tried several people to be his assistant, but she's like his shadow. She's incredible. Of all the different managers that I've had that I hold dear, she has surpassed all of them. She really believes in what we're doing.
I have gained everything within 2 years that I tried for my whole life to gain. I'm sober, I'm happy, I can love somebody else. You know, I've gotten married and just so much more of just peace, joy, and love that I have that I never had my whole life.
The Mississippi River is a very long river. It would be an incredible opportunity to replicate Finn. There's a lot of people here who could use this sense of hope.
Finn is a triple bottom line business, meaning they measure their value by their social, environmental, and financial impact on a community.
We have positioned ourselves as a high-end product, a high-end made in the USA product.
Right now, they mostly sell to restaurants in Kentucky, where it's often not called carp, but things like Kentucky Blue Snapper. Sometimes that's the only way to get people to eat it.
And it sells like crazy. You can go beyond this fish. It could be other invasive species. Like, I already identify my next species. I want to deal with snakeheads.
My guess is they'll probably have to change that name too. For Earth Eats, I'm Taylor Killow.
You can learn more about the business at fingourmetfoods.com and see Andrea LaGore-Smith processing carp at eartheats.org. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent and owner of Personal Financial Services, providing tax preparation for individuals and businesses. Located on the Beeline Trail, more information at personalfinancialservices.net. Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. And Urgent Foods, a locally owned food truck offering gourmet choices for all lifestyles, tastes, and diets, from gluten-free to kosher and halal. Food for everyone, everywhere. Full menu and truck location available at urgentfoods.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Annie Corrigan.